Well, I want to begin by talking about technology. I love technology. And we all love the way, I think, that technology makes our lives better, especially parents. You know, when I was a kid growing up, this was, 30 years ago, I'm 39 years old. And so my dad worked nights, and so my mom, when we go grocery shopping, she would have to take all four of us kids with her to the grocery store. And you can imagine how that went. So she's got, you know, one of us is on the end of the cart where you're not supposed to be, one of us inside the cart, the baby is crying and getting hungry and so forth. And mom's trying to put things into the cart. We're trying to pull those things out and put things we want into the cart. We're screaming, we're tired, we're hungry, and this goes on for hours. My mom is pulling her hair out, bless her heart. This is where we're shopping for clothes, doesn't matter what it is. She's dragging us around with her. And I thank the Lord for my wonderful mother. But I'm thankful for technology because today, my wife, we have four children as well, four young kids. My oldest is seven. My youngest is 7 months old. Three boys and one girl. But anyway, so my wife now, with the aid of technology, can take out her... It's not taking the microphone. I thought she'd have one. There we go. Sorry about that. But she takes out her smartphone, and from the leisure of her couch, any time of day she chooses, she goes to her Walmart app. And she can select the favorites from the week before, anything else she wants very quickly and easily while sipping her coffee, put that in the app, say when she wants it picked up. Then I, without the... I better set this right here. Without the children, I go to the store. At the time I select it, and I sit in my van while scanning the news for 3 to 4 minutes while a teenager loads my groceries for me into the car. And 3 to 4 minutes later, I thank him, and I pull away, and it's absolutely wonderful. We love technology. You know, when growing up, I also remember, this was, again, before cell phones, before GPS. And so my mom would be driving around, and every once in a while, what would happen? She would get lost. There's no GPS. There's nobody you can call. There might be an atlas under the seat next to her or so forth. We'd have to figure out where we're going. And of course, us four kids are being patient the whole time while mom is trying to figure out where in the world she is going. No, we're screaming, we're crying, we're fighting with one another in the back seat, and mom is pulling her hair out, trying to figure out how to get back home. I remember another time we were traveling on vacation. Now, I'm from Iowa. I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa. And we were going to New York City. We had several reasons for going that way. We're hitting some sights downtown New York City. I remember my dad's driving. My mom's the navigator. She's got this huge map. And, of course, this isn't like Bug Tussle, Iowa. There is no Bug Tussle, by the way. I just made that up. In rural Iowa, this is six lanes of incredible traffic, turnoffs every which way, and my dad has got to make a turn. Where do I go? Where do I go? And my mom's trying to figure out, I don't know. He's going to tell me. And, of course, all the while in the back, us kids are, again, patiently waiting while dad is, no, we're pulling our hair out. Are we going to get there yet? I'm hungry. Can we stop at McDonald's? I really want to get out. I have to go to the bathroom. My dad is pulling his hair out. You know what happens today because of technology? I never get lost. And it's not because I have such a great sense of direction. I actually don't. It's because I have a GPS. And it tells me turn by turn where I need to go. Do you realize, by the way, that the GPS directions in your pocket and in mine has the processing power that is 30,000 times the processing speed of the 70-pound navigational computer that guided Apollo 11 to the moon. Do you realize that? Technology is amazing. It's a wonderful thing, and it makes our lives better. It helps grandparents, too. I remember growing up, I loved my grandparents, but I had my dad's parents were 3 hours south of us in southwestern Iowa, and my mom's parents were 10 hours away in Michigan. And I got to see my grandparents pretty much basically one time per year. We might go to my dad's parents for Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas on that year as well, and then not quite as often, but maybe every other year or so, we'd make the trek to Michigan, drive 10 hours each way to see my grandparents. And I loved it. It's a wonderful time. But today, my children, and my wife's parents are missionaries in Germany, Heidelberg, Germany, but my kids get to see their grandparents at least every week, if not every day, in Germany. How? Through technology. They can look for free over the internet and see video chat back and forth with their grandparents. And they love it, and of course, their grandparents love it as well. Technology is a wonderful thing. We could go on and on about this, but the reality is Barna Research polled parents about this, and they found nearly 8 in 10 parents today believe that raising kids is actually more complicated than it was when they were kids. What do you think the number one reason for that is? Technology and social media. Exactly. So the question is, are we better off or are we worse off because of technology? So technology is designed to solve problems, but it always creates additional problems that are new as well. Go ahead and start this up here if I can. Let's see if I can do this. Technology, right? Yeah. There we go. Okay, I think we're in business. All right. Technology, is it an effective tool or an enticing trap? We've all gone to eat in a restaurant or even at a home, someone's home, and seen a family like this one. Everyone is eating together. They're sitting nicely together in the restaurant, but everyone is in their own little world on their electronic device, their phone, their tablet, their earphones, so forth. In 2016, Time magazine named the iPhone the single most influential gadget of all time, and I think it's easy for us to understand why. So today, I want us to consider, what does the Bible have to say about technology? A theology of technology, if you will, and how it affects us. Is it an effective tool, or is it an enticing trap? Now, I was greatly helped in my study for this message by two books. Number one, 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You by Tony Reinke, and also a book entitled The Next Story by Tim Challies. Excellent books if you want further information on this. They're very helpful. But what I want us to discover this morning is you must be careful to use God's gift of technology with disciplined discernment for God's glory. You must carefully use God's gift of technology with disciplined discernment for His glory. Number one, technology can be a tool for glorifying God. What is technology? Ever thought about that? Well, Genesis 1, 26 and 27 tells us that God created man in His image. And just as God created, we also create things. Now, God's the one that gave us the ability to do that. It's all from God. But the practical result of our creation is technology. So therefore, God is actually the author of all technology, and it is a good gift from Him. Genesis 1:28 goes on to explain, what is God's mandate for us as His creation? It's to have dominion over the earth and to subdue it. Tim Challies says this. He says, God's basic instruction to mankind is to develop the resources of the natural world and use God-given abilities to bring glory to Him. So to put it in more practical terms, God is glorified in our creativity, whether that leads us to craft a painting that moves our hearts to praise or to design a plow that will better allow us to plant and harvest a crop. So here's Tim Challies' definition of technology. It says, technology is the creative activity of using tools to shape God's creation for practical purposes. That's what technology is. Let's keep that in mind as we're talking about this. So really, technology is not a new thing. We tend to think of the latest gadgets, but technology has been around since the very, very beginning. It's simply a way to improve things that have always been done. For example, mankind has always communicated, right? But man has used his creative ability from God and the natural resources, also from God, to solve communication problems. We've developed writing instruments and tablets, paper, to allow us to communicate over distance and preserve that which was communicated. We developed the telegraph, then the phone, then the radio, then the TV, then the HD TV, then the 4K TV, soon the 8K TV, and soon the 8K TV will be so outdated it'll be sitting for sale. For almost nothing at your garage sale, if we still have garages at that time. And then, of course, today, the internet. We develop microphones and speakers so a large group can hear us communicate at once. So, technology cannot be inherently evil in and of itself. But like everything else in the sinful world, it is subject to the curse. And therefore, Satan will try to make it become an idol in our heart that takes God's place. For example, God has used the wonderful gift of the printing press technology for the distribution of Bibles. Missionaries, as I mentioned, my in-laws, can video chat with their family. We can watch HD videos and see the mission field, almost like we're actually there from our auditorium here at church. And we can gain a burden for it and pray much more specifically for our missionaries. We can live stream services like this one in a pandemic so that anyone that's on vacation, they're sick, whatever the case may be, can watch it while they're away on their iPhone or their Android, whichever you follow. And as we'll see later in the message, Satan will do everything that he can to use the same technology to communicate evil things and to destroy us spiritually. Another example, God has given mankind the natural resources to develop and make medicine for when we're sick. What does Satan tempt us to do with God's good gift of medicine? Satan tempts us to become self-sufficient, to live independently of God, and to depend on human doctors and man-made medicine rather than recognizing, by the way, nothing wrong with medicine or doctors, those are good gifts from God, but rather than recognizing that it's all a gift from God, who is the great physician. This was Satan's temptation to Eve in the Garden of Eden from the very beginning. He says, you don't have to depend on God. He's not really good. You can live independently of God. You can create things, technology that'll make your lives better in your own strength and depend on that. You don't need God. So, but again, the smartphone in your pocket is not evil, but Satan wants to use it to distract you from God and to make you self-sufficient rather than trusting in God. I like what evangelist Will Galkin said. He says, even a good thing can become a bad thing when it becomes the ruling thing. Even a good thing can become a bad thing when it becomes the ruling thing. Tim Challies points out that the same technology that can be used for God's glory can also be used for evil. For example, medical technology that can be used to save a baby's life, wonderful thing, in delivery, or it can be used, that same technology, to murder a baby in an abortion. Nuclear technology can be used to provide power to an entire city, a wonderful thing, or it can be used as a nuclear bomb to destroy, just like that, an entire city. Again, it's not the technology itself is good or evil, it's the human application of that technology. Now, we can easily see the many, many dangers of technology that are obvious to us. For example, when we think of the internet, we automatically think of terrible, evil things like pornography, other things that are clearly forbidden in Scripture, in the movies we watch, or the music we listen to, and so forth, that are not pleasing to God. And we could easily spend an entire sermon, a whole series of sermons really, on objectionable content that is facilitated by technology. But this morning, I want to focus on a more subtle way that technology, even when the content is completely clean, can affect us. What could possibly be wrong with it if it's completely clean? But again, these not so obvious influences can actually be incredibly destructive, as we'll see, to us spiritually and requires careful discernment. Here's our text. You can turn your Bibles if you'd like to Ephesians chapter 5. We'll look at a number of passages this morning, but this is our main text in Ephesians 5, verses 15 through 17. Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 says this. It says, see then that ye walk, in other words, you live your life circumspectly. That means carefully. Not as fools, but as wise. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. Proverbs 27:12 says, a prudent or a wise man foreseeth the evil. In other words, he sees the danger ahead and says, I don't want to go there. And he hides himself. Excuse me, but the fool, or the simple, or the fool, passes on and are punished. You know, we naturally tend to see the positive benefits over the risks of new technology. But if we're wise, as these passages encourage us to be, we need to use biblical discernment to guard our hearts from the negative possibilities of technology. So, number one, technology can be a tool for glorifying God. But secondly, technology can also be an idol keeping you from loving God. It can be an idol keeping you from loving God. Look at Matthew 22, 36 through 38. Came to Jesus and said, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. You see, technology exposes what our heart really wants. You are what you love because you worship what you love. We'll be talking about that tonight. By the way, all three of these messages that I've prepared for today, this morning we're talking about technology, very practical application. In the Sunday school hour, we're going to be talking about self-control, which will be helpful for us in this. And then tonight we're going to talk about guarding our heart, how we are what we love. So they'll all work together, I trust. That's the goal. And supposed to be a blessing and encouragement to us from God's word. Okay, Barna again said this, asked this question, in what way has technology actually made your life more difficult? What do you think the top answers were? The number one, I waste a lot of time. Secondly, I'm much more distracted. You relate to that? Technology has significantly changed our concept of information. Let me give you a little history of technology. I think this will be interesting, but also really help us to think about this. So in 1844, Samuel Morse, there he is, created a standardized system of communication with the what? The telegraph. The telegraph. Historians call this the Victorian Internet. Believe it or not, there was even stories of, I kid you not, online dating back in the 1800s through the telegraph. People dating, courting, and even getting married over the telegraph. So you think online dating is a new thing? No, it's been around since the 1800s. It's nothing new under the sun, right? But what did the telegraph do? Now news could travel across the world quickly and cheaply, and a new problem of information overload suddenly appeared. Businessmen were now receiving rush telegrams at the dinner table at home. Again, emails interrupting dinner, no, it's nothing new. It's been going on since the 1800s. But another important shift happened. Listen to this. Instead of only hearing local news, before you had the telegraph and get all this news from everywhere else, you would get local news, things that was useful. So, for example, when to plant your crops, where to buy things, supplies in town, events that are going on in your local community and so forth, things you could act on. But instead, now people heard news from all over the world, which was interesting. Interesting. It wasn't something they could act on. In other words, information became an end in itself. It went from functional to entertaining. Interesting, but largely irrelevant. Suddenly, people began to know a lot of facts, but had real experiential knowledge of very little. Of course, the telegraph soon gave way to what? The telephone, Alexander Graham Bell. But another huge shift came with the television. A culture dominated by words became dominated by images. Now, images communicate in a way that is very different from words. The initial impact of words is our thoughts, our thinking, whereas an image provides a feeling. Reading words requires use of the left hemisphere of our brain. It involves logic, sequence, and categories. Seeing images uses more of the right hemisphere of our brain. It involves perception and feeling, and it requires much less mental effort. Again, it's not wrong, it's just different. It's interesting to be aware of that. Tim Challis explains it this way. Put his quote up here. He says, the change from word to image is reprogramming my brain. The television image is extraordinarily stimulating to the brain. And not in a healthy, this discussion of politics is so stimulating kind of way, more like the sugar is stimulating to the body way. The televised brain candy we consume doesn't develop or even require any mental capacity. Learning through images and video media, visual media, is directly opposed to learning by reading, which requires a more sustained focus and actually generates new skills and capacities in the brain. This makes television an ideal medium for amusement. While the message of a particular program can be deadly serious, the medium itself is all about any entertainment. You know, I often hear many people say, I can't tell you as a pastor how often I hear this, well, you know, I don't read very much. I don't read very well. I don't read very much. And a recent CNN report tells us that Americans now spend an average of 10 hours a day viewing images on a screen of some kind. And is it possible that our brains are becoming reprogrammed and addicted to the amusement of constantly changing images requiring very little thinking about ideas and concepts. Is it any wonder we have such short attention spans today? Folks, Satan knows exactly what he's doing. How do you think this affects our ability to listen to a sermon and process ideas for 45 minutes? Is it any wonder that it's so hard for us to stay focused for more than 30 seconds in prayer or to focus deeply while we're reading our Bible compared to skimming the digital content on our phones that we're so used to doing now, or really even just thinking about anything deeply for a prolonged period of time? You realize that over 1 billion people check Facebook daily. And the average amount of time spent on Facebook product line, that includes Messenger and Instagram, is 50 minutes per day. Compare that with a recent study that found the average Christian in America spends 1 minute in prayer per day. 5 minutes in prayer per day if you're a pastor, compared to 50 minutes a day on Facebook. You know, it's so easy to quickly click on my phone and be endlessly entertained by distraction with content we can quickly skim, and it makes careful reading of my Bible or prayer or thinking deeply seem like really hard work by comparison. What does the Bible say about this? Sorry, I guess I missed part of that last quote there. Psalm 119, 36 and 37 says this. It says, the psalmist said, "Incline my heart unto thy testimonies and not to covetousness or selfish gain. Turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity." In other words, looking at worthless things. "And quicken thou me, give me life in thy way," God's way. We are addicted to constant visual amusement. But unlike other addictions with obvious severe consequences, in other words, we know things like drugs or pornography, those have obvious to us consequences. We say, yeah, I know to stay away from that because I know that'll destroy my life. But we have very little motivation to stop with these kinds of things because the consequences don't seem that severe. Well, you know, a little distraction, a little wasted time, not that big a deal. What does 2 Corinthians 4:18 say? It says, "While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." You know, when we're regularly thinking about things in this life, rather than about God, I'm not saying bad things, I'm saying things in this life instead of things about God. Is that a big deal? Folks, that is a huge deal. And Satan knows it. See, we're bombarded with so much trivial information on our smartphones, it's hard for us to focus on what's truly, eternally important. Many people begin their day not with their Bible, but what? What's the first thing they do? Wake up, pick up your smartphone, see what's going on. And it's no surprise when we relinquish our morning hours by turning to our phone, but why? Well, one pastor explained it this way. I'm just going to read from him. He had 6 reasons why we tend to do this. See if this resonates with you. Number 1, novelty candy. We want to be informed about what is new in the world and new among our friends, and we don't want to be left out of something newsworthy or noteworthy. Number 2, ego candy. We want to know what people are saying about us and how they're responding to things we've said and posted. I wonder how many likes I got for that post I put, that picture. Do people like it? What are they saying about it? Number 3, entertainment candy. We want to feed on what is fascinating, weird, strange, wonderful, shocking, or spellbinding. Number 4, boredom avoidance. We want to put off the day ahead, especially when it looks boring and routine and holds nothing of fascination to capture our interest. I've created an appetite. I've got to constantly be stimulated with interesting things. Number 5, responsibility avoidance. We want to put off the burdens of the roles God has given us as fathers, mothers, bosses, employees, and students. Finally, number 6, hardship avoidance. We want to put off dealing with relational conflicts or the pain, disease, and disabilities of our body. What's the quickest way to do that? Distract myself. Pick up my phone. And the Bible helps us to rightly address this. The internet, if you go there, is going to give you the wrong answers. Look what Psalm 46:10 says. God says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth." What's the reality? The reality is that there is a God in heaven. And we will all, every single one of us, give account for how we have spent every moment of your life, whether for yourself or for God. Also, this digital information that we consume trains our brains to quickly skim content and move on to the next thing. That's what we do with the news, which is very different from deep, sustained, linear study from learning or reading from the Bible or any other book. Tony Reinke explains very helpful, and here's, I'll put the quote on the screen for us to read it together. He says, the bigger challenge for us in the digital age is not the mental pollution of information overload. In other words, that can be a problem, but that's not the biggest problem. But the nutritional deficiency of the content that has been engineered like modern snacks to trigger our appetites. You realize when I pick up Facebook, I don't know how many friends, and the content is endless. I can keep scrolling and I will never reach the end. There's always new content from hundreds and hundreds of people that I have friended on Facebook from years in the past. And that could go on forever. It's all new content. So he says, online information, next screen here, is increasingly hyper-palatable, akin to alluring junk food. Breaking news, tabloid gossip, viral memes, and the latest controversies in sports, politics, and entertainment all draw us to our phones as if they were deep-fried Twinkies. That sounds good. Held out on sticks at the state fair. Digital delicacies are eye-grabbing and appealing, but they lack nutrition. Now, question. Is it wrong to eat a deep-fried Twinkie? No. Can I get an amen on that? Amen. However, if 90% of what you eat is deep-fried Twinkies, what is going to happen to you? You, my friend, are going to turn into a big, fat, deep-fried Twinkie. Folks, the same is true with the digital content we consume. And remember, we are talking about clean content. In other words, nothing sinful and objectionable in the content itself. We're just talking about the type of content we're consuming. Keep that in mind. This affects our ability to have meaningful conversations with others about meaningful ideas. Think about it. Rather than sitting around like our opening picture we saw, the dinner table and enjoying meaningful conversation with our family and our friends, far too often, what do many American families do? They passively sit around the dinner table watching what? Television or the smartphone that does all the talking for them. Isn't that nice? We can just sit and enjoy our delicious meal while all the people on the TV entertain us and talk for us. Andrew Sherwood, a graduate student, this is a quote from here, or he, about him, true story. He said he decided to get rid of his social media and his smartphone. His wife said it was the greatest gift that he ever gave her. Why? Here's what she said. When you had your smartphone, you were a walking vending machine of whatever you'd ingested that day, she told him. It was difficult to talk about deeper things that mattered because you were constantly distracted by internet litter. You're now able to focus and give necessary attention to deeper issues. More of what we talk about comes from your heart rather than your Twitter feed. Folks, this is nothing new. I like what C.S. Lewis said in his book, The Screwtape Letters, all the way back in 1942. He described it as the Satan's nothing strategy. It is a strategy that eventually leaves a man at the end of his life looking back in lament and saying this, I now see that I spent most of my life in doing neither what I ought nor what I liked. Think about his prophetic words from back in 1942 in light of the news, the TV shows, and the social media that are consumed by people today. Here's what he says. He says this is C.S. Lewis, this nothing strategy is very strong, enough to steal away a man's best years. Not in sweet sins, but in a dreary flickering of the mind. Over it knows now what and knows not why, and the gratification of curiosities so feeble that the man is half aware of them. Or in the long, dim labyrinth of reveries, in other words, a maze of daydreams, that have not even lust or ambition to give them a relish, but which once chance association has started them, the creature is too weak and fuddled to shake off. Think about what you watch on TV or read on social media and how much time you spend on it. You ever been watching a bad movie? And I don't mean bad in objectionable, sinful content. I just mean poorly written. The plot line isn't very interesting. But what do we often sometimes do? Well, I just want to see what happens. I'm so curious, so I'm just going to... And then we watch it to the end, and it gets worse as it goes. Again, in plot content and so forth. You say, well, that was a waste of 2 hours. Why do we do that? You ever bored? And so you're scrolling on Facebook or the news, just scanning for something to alleviate your boredom. What do we see on Facebook a lot of times? Well, I might see pictures of somebody's vacation. Recently, I saw workout bloopers. You know, some people are working out in the gym and all the funny, weird things they do. Funny cats running around. Oh, that's kind of interesting. And I realized I just spent 30 minutes of my life scrolling that I'm never going to get those 30 minutes back. And many of us do this multiple times a day, every single day. Again, there is nothing wrong with one deep-fried Twinkie once in a while. But folks, how many are we consuming digitally? See, most of us focus on whether the content is right or wrong. And we should do that. That's very important. We should not be allowing sinful content to come into our eye gate, if you will. But that's not the best question to be asking. The question should be this: does my smartphone or my TV, the behavior there, move me toward God or away from God? Do they edify? Do they build me up and others up? Or do they build nothing of lasting value? How does my time of amusement on my smartphone compare to with my time spent loving God and loving others in a meaningful way? Those are the two greatest commandments that God has given us. Does my smartphone help me or hinder me in reaching my spiritual goals, my family spiritual goals? Again, Satan is very content, folks, to let us waste our life watching good, clean content. Although it's very unlikely that's all we're watching, by the way. It has no eternal value and does nothing to build our relationship with God. Satan rubs his hands together with glee as we waste our life watching that clean content, all the while we are patting ourselves on the back because we're not watching the bad stuff. Ephesians 5:16, again, our text this morning says this: "See then that you walk, live your life circumspectly, carefully, not as fools." Don't be fools, be wise. "Redeeming the time," in other words, making the best use of the time, "because the days are evil." Psalm 90 verse 12 says, "So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom." James tells us that life is a vapor. How are you using your quickly gone, vapor-like life? Has your technology, its clean amusement, become an idol that keeps you from growing in grace, from having time or the desire and the capacity to spend time with God and His Word in prayer, from talking about meaningful ideas rather than the funny memes that you saw online today? Again, don't misunderstand. I'm not against fun. I'm not against relaxing sports or TV or technology. Again, I love technology. I really do. But it's a question of balance. Being aware of how these things affect us and making wise, discerning choices with our time and what we let influence us. We can all experience what we call FOMO, fear of missing out. Ask you this morning, in heaven, do you think any of us is going to be look back and regret, "Oh man, I missed that funny meme. She sent that funny meme, I didn't even get to see it. It was so funny, I missed it. Oh man, that football game, I missed it. I didn't get to see who won." You think we're going to be in heaven thinking about that? No. But what might we regret as we stand before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account to our Lord and Savior for how we spend our time? I might regret not spending more time doing things, paying attention to things that mattered for eternity. Philippians 3:8, Paul said, "Yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency, the surpassing worth of what? The knowledge of Christ Jesus, my Lord." That's the thing that matters. "For whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ." The songwriter captured it well when they wrote, "By and by, when I look on his face, I'll wish I had given him more, more, so much more." Folks, we only have one life. So technology can be a tool for God's glory, number one. Number two, it can also be an idol for keeping me from loving God. And number three, finally, technology can be a distraction from loving people. A distraction from loving people. Again, Matthew 22, 39, 40 says this. Focus on the second part of the verse there. We talked about loving God, first of all. Now let's focus on the second part there. Jesus said, "The second commandment is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So technology is an effective tool when it helps us bond with real people that God has put into our lives. Again, my kids getting to talk to their grandparents in Germany. But it's out of balance when we sit on the couch and out of boredom, we keep up with people that we will never actually meet. For example, celebrities or your favorite sports hero. Again, nothing wrong with following sports, but when it takes more, we're spent more time consuming following their lives, the celebrity and the sports hero, know everything about them, while all the while we ignore our spouse or our own children vying for our attention. I wish you them away so that we can relax a little bit after a hard day's work with my phone. Does this sound familiar? Husband, you come home from work. Your wife says, "Hi, honey, how was your day?" "That was good, good, good. Hey, honey, could you help me get the kids ready for dinner? We're almost ready to have a nice dinner here." Sure. And your wife says, "Hey, can we talk about what's going on tomorrow? I have several things I need to ask you about." Oh, man. You know, it's been a long day at work. Can we talk about it after dinner? I'm just going to finish this show real quick, and then I'm sure we can talk about it a little later or tomorrow. Sound familiar? Again, we lose track of time, and it's very easy to check the clock and realize I've just spent 20 minutes, 30 minutes scrolling through Facebook or the news or whatever it is, all the while missing my son playing right in front of me or paying attention to my wife like I should be. On our phones, we control who we interact with on social media. I get to choose whether to accept a friend request or deny them. And everything is geared toward whatever interests me, whatever entertains me. It's my news. Even on ESPN, I can select, what are your favorite teams? What sports do you want to follow? It's all customized to me. On YouTube, you can subscribe to your favorite channels. And so then the customized information comes that's only what you're interested in. You block out everything else. On Netflix, you can have your own account for each person so everybody can watch what they're most interested in. Technology can make me only focus on what makes me happy. But in real life, with our families, in our church, sometimes we have to deny ourselves and focus on loving others who have very different interests than we do. Different ideas they want to talk about. What is Proverbs 27? I'm sorry. I guess I might not have that one on the screen for you. Proverbs 27:17 says this, "Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friends." Folks, it's good for us to interact with those who are different from us, and that is how we grow. Do you ever think that God might put an annoying person or two in your life intentionally to allow you, to teach you how to show true love and patience and to become more like Jesus Christ? To teach you how to really love. Anyone can love somebody else with their same interests, but Jesus says what? Love your neighbor, and even further than that, love your enemies. You know, it used to be, entertainment-wise, before television and so forth, people would sing around the piano back in the 1800s and so forth. That was one of the main forms of entertainment. But that has been replaced by personal music, personalized music, with your headphones. You listen to whatever you want to. Board games have been replaced by personal video games. Everybody can play whatever game they want to. Even the one TV that everybody used to watch in the living room, we still have that, but it's been replaced by individual phone screens or tablet screens or a TV in every person's bedroom so that everybody can watch what they want. Folks, we're losing our sense of community. It's what's happening. What does a person on their phone in a public place or before the church service say? It says, don't interact with me now. I'm working on something important. And it's kind of like a portable shield. I go around. If I don't want to talk to somebody, I just get in my phone and so forth so that I don't have to talk to people. You go on an airplane. What does everybody do? Quick, get the headphones in so the guy next to you can't talk to you. Oh, good. I made it. Now I'm in my own little protective bubble. Shields up. Ah, now I can do what I want to do. I'm not saying these things are sinful, folks, to watch your screens, again, a laptop, or to use headphones on your own, but I'm not saying that. I'm trying to illustrate this broader principle. Is it hindering us from loving God and loving our neighbors? We can close ourselves off from the outside world, and we can close ourselves off from ourselves as well. Oftentimes, people will use music or distractions of the phones and so forth to drown out problems or guilt. I'm feeling guilty, or I'm thinking, that introspection that is healthy to examine ourselves can be drowned out with technology. Can distract us from sharing the gospel with people. One pastor explained it this way. He said, I meet more and more kids that don't know how to talk to people and who don't even want to look up from their screens. This pastor says, we are raising soldiers. We are raising missionaries. Our job is to get these kids to where they can get into the world and start conversations with people and bring the light of Jesus and the message of the gospel to them. He says, eye-to-eye authenticity is the key to empathy, humility, and trust in our relationships. And these are skills we all need. The question is, are we losing those skills because of our technology? So, conclusion. Should we get rid of our technology? Should we just get rid of the internet? Should we just go off the grid, go back to dumb phones or rotary phones, throw out tech? Well, one individual named Paul Miller, he was a digital journalist, absolutely loved technology, covered it as a journalist, and he decided to try this. He was going to take one entire year off from technology. No internet, get rid of a smartphone, so forth. Do you think that solved the problem for Paul Miller? Well, listen to what he has to say. He says, so the moral choices aren't very different without the internet. It's hard to say exactly what changed. I guess, you know, those first few months felt so good because I felt the absence of the pressures of the internet. My freedom felt tangible. But when I stopped seeing my life in the context of I don't use the internet, that's my identity, that's kind of my thing right now, the offline existence became mundane. Listen to this. And the worst sides of myself began to emerge. Again, remember, folks, technology, man has always been communicating since the very beginning. Technology just allows us to do it better. So the solution is not less technology, but Christ changing our selfish hearts. Otherwise, we're going to face the same sin of selfishness just in different ways, whether with or without the technology. That's what we're going to talk about tonight, by the way, is our heart. How do we change that? You know, feeling guilty about our technology or whatever the Lord's convicting us about, that can be a powerful motivation in the short term. But folks, I'm going to tell you, I know this from personal experience, it will not change you in the long term. It's not a long-term solution. Before long, we'll be reverting back to our old behaviors because it's insufficient to change us. It's only when we recognize what God has to offer and say, I want what God has, I find more satisfaction in that than I do in what the world has to offer, that's when we begin to change. So we have to realize that the void in our lives that we're trying to fill with pleasure of our smartphones can only be filled with a close relationship with Christ. And until you believe that, you're never going to have victory in this area. Again, remember Andrew Sherwood, I mentioned him earlier, and his wife's testimony? Here's what he said about getting rid of the technology in his life. How it helped him. He says this, I believe getting rid of my iPhone is one of the best decisions I've made in my adult life. And he says, this is important. That's not because I believe it is wrong, sinful, or always unwise to have a smartphone. But because I discovered, this is wisdom, by the way, maturity, I was too immature and too undisciplined to use it well. He says, personally, I overestimated what my iPhone would give me, and I underestimated what it would take from me. What are the benefits without it, he says. Number one, increased focus on the things that matter. He says, do you ever get a nagging sense of conviction when you're supposed to be paying attention to your wife, kids, discipleship companion, your pastor, the sermon, whatever it is, and you ever so quietly click on the power button to check your phone. He says, I did thousands of times, actually. My daughter would happily run over from the playground and find me nose down, buried in some sports equivalent to People magazine. Truthfully, I'm sickened over the memories I should have been making with my family that were instead empty moments spent with my iPhone. Another benefit, he said, was increased prayer. I used to check my iPhone at stoplights, carpool lines, walking someplace, anywhere I had even a moment's downtime. Without my smartphone, there are new opportunities to pray throughout the day. Another benefit, reading more actual books. He said, I underestimated the time I would spend reading junk on my phone. Every night in bed, every morning when I woke up, and the countless slivers of stolen time in between. There has been such refreshment in keeping my Bible and a few library books near me to read whenever I have free time. Again, folks, remember, technology is not inherently evil. It is a good gift from God to be used with discernment for His glory. It's about balance. We need to ask ourselves, am I controlling and using my technology for God's glory? Or is my technology controlling and changing me? It requires maturity, wisdom, and discernment to accurately assess that. So, a couple practical suggestions. These, I think, are from Tony Reinke. He says, make the car, when you're in the car together, the dinner table, again, the title slide, not having technology at the dinner table. Again, is it a sin to look at your smartphone at the table? Absolutely not, okay? Don't misunderstand, it's not a sin. But wisdom will determine. And this is a practical suggestion to not have, make the dinner table a device-free zone. Suggest the bedroom. Make the bedroom a device-free zone. I have a question for you parents, especially with teenagers. I'm a youth pastor, all right? Would you put a lock on your teen's bedroom door and give the key to that lock to your teenager so no one has a key but him or her? Would you ever do that? No, at least I wouldn't. I would never do that. So why in the world would you give them unfiltered internet access with their own password and only they have the password? Which is more dangerous, folks? Folks, the internet is a gateway to the world. You can get anything on the internet. You can meet anyone, and the odds of a dangerous person coming to your teen or child through the TV or the internet in their bedroom versus an actual person walking through that locked bedroom door, which is the greater danger? I would never do that. Again, is it a sin to have a TV in your bedroom? No, it's not. Don't misunderstand me. Is it wise? Is it best for you? That's a decision you have to make before God. But suggestion, keep the bedrooms technology free. Vacations. Maybe you take a technology fast. Once a year for a week or two on vacation, we're going to not use our TV and smartphones on vacation. Take a break from it. Again, not a sin if you do. I'm just something to consider. And finally, plan to have your devotions before you look at your phone. Is it a sin to do the other way? No, it's not. But something to keep in mind, to keep loving God, loving my neighbor, the greatest commandments, first. Well, help us with that. Have you been using your technology to glorify God? You should think in your own heart as we close. Or has it become an idol? A good thing that's become a bad thing because it's become the ruling thing. That's hindering you from loving God or distraction from loving others in your family or here at church or at work. Again, remember that motivation by guilt will not change it. Okay, I hope you'll stay around. Next session, Sunday school, we're going to talk about self-control. What does the Bible say about self-control? How do we say, I want to do this, but I have a hard time doing it. We're going to talk about that. And then tonight at 6 o'clock, we're going to talk about guarding our hearts, what we love, and so forth. But here's what I want you to do. I want to encourage you. You don't have to raise your hands, but think about this. How many of you would be willing to commit to discuss with your spouse, your children, your family, in other words, today, this very afternoon, how you can apply these truths about technology in your family for God's glory?